And welcome to a bonus Previously in Europe episode. Bonus Patreon, bonus Patreon.
Bonus.
This is the first one, so we kind of don't know what we're doing. But in another way, we kind of do. Because we had a vote on our Patreon. We're very democratic. And we presented a limited option of topics because, you know, it's representing our actual democracy.
Well, actually, you know, what we should have done is had ranked voting, but
Patreon doesn't really allow that.
Yeah, the built-in Patreon poll system doesn't allow for that. So maybe we'll make it a, I don't know, like a spreadsheet or something next time. I'll figure out something else to do.
Yeah.
No promises.
Number one reason to join the Patreon, we're going to use it as like weird democratic purity experiments. So we can put in all our like critiques of various voting systems that we've had on the podcast into practice on a very low scale, low stakes situation.
Yeah, the outcome really just will eat up a few hours of our time, and we're only going to give you options that we're comfortable with anyway. Unless you suggest that, if someone suggests an option and then they can get, you know, support, we're welcome to a coup.
Yes. We're the only regime in favor of a coup of ourselves.
Yeah. So this is the first bonus episode where the winner of the vote was a summary episode of Slovenia, because Slovenia is the least talked about country on the podcast, and we have data and a map on our website to back that up.
Yeah, I think this is to caveat that a little bit. I haven't checked the map again recently, but as far as I remember, we have talked about certain like micro states more than Slovenia, which is embarrassing. But I also think Slovenia ties with some micro states.
Okay,
so there's that. And also, Slovenia is not a micro state.
What?
That's our first little factoid for the evening. And also, on top of this, it was the last country for us to talk about, to like fill in the entire map.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's kind of why it was a interesting topic for us. Mm-hmm. But yes, for the future votes, we are open to suggestions. We will probably bring back some of the topics that didn't win this time. Because those are things that we are prepared or interested in talking about.
Yes,
and,
indeed.
We think they'll make interesting topics, but yeah, you know, so Slovenia.
Yes.
The other side of the Alps. That's their tourist slogan that I've seen before.
Oh my. One further caveat before I start talking about this. Great thank you to our Patreon members. Without you, this episode would not be possible, or we wouldn't be bothered with it. And if you are a Patreon subscriber, you are hearing this episode before other people, I believe.
Yes, and if you are not a Patreon subscriber, how have we hurt you? And also, you are getting this a month late. So while you're enjoying this episode, take solace in the fact that some cool cats who've supported our show and helped keep the podcast lights on... we have lights, I guess.
Yeah.
They're enjoying a new episode now. And that might be about... why is Israel in the Eurovision?
That's a good episode idea, actually. You should put that on the vote. The... thank you to Patreon people. It would be very funny, actually, in the interim, if some very big news happens relating to Slovenia, and therefore this podcast becomes, like, woefully out of date in the month before people get to listen to it. But anyway, I digress. Cool, so I think for country summaries, I wanted to get two very starkly different views of the country as a summary beforehand. So the two I've decided on this time is, when you search Slovenia in Google, it comes up with a card which is semi-generated, I think, from Wikipedia, but then sometimes it's not, it's from other sources. So I'm going to read out that description. But then following that, I'm going to read out the CIA's description. Because the CIA provides an online, you know, world fact book in which they describe all the countries of the world and whether the US is, you know, going to bomb it soon or not.
So, spoilers for later.
Yes. The Google text rarely has anything about bombing, but That remains to be seen. Anyway, Google's description is, Slovenia, a country in Central Europe, is known for its mountains, ski resorts, and lakes. On Lake Bled, a glacial lake fed by the hot springs, the town of Bled contains a church-topped islet? Yes.
Islet. Sure.
Islet. Oh, god damn it. And a cliffside medieval castle. In Ljubljana, Slovenia's capital, Baroque facades mix with the 20th century architecture of native Jože Plečnik. Close enough.
Oh.
No. What, how would you say that?
It's Jože.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, right, yeah. Jože.
Plečnik.
Plečnik. That makes that sense a lot better. What did I say? This is why I should make you read everything out. Whose iconic Tromostrove triple bridge, close enough, spans the tightly curving Ljubljana River. Interesting fact about Ljubljana, I've been to Ljubljana, the bridges are very nice, and I would agree with all their architecture comments. We once had a sing-off with a cappella group when we were out drinking one night. Good times. Anyway, moving on again. The CIA has a very different, more fact-heavy description.
Less about architecture, it seems.
Yes. The Slovene lands were a part of the Austro-Hungarian Empire until the latter's dissolution at the end of World War One. In 1918, the Slovenes joined the Serbs and the Croats in forming a new multinational state, which was named Yugoslavia, in 1929. After World War II, Slovenia was one of the republics in the restored Yugoslavia, which, though communist, good one CIA, soon distanced itself from the Soviet Union and spearheaded the non-aligned movement. Dissatisfied with the exercise of power by the majority Serbs, the Slovenes succeeded in establishing their independence in 1991, after a short 10-day war. Historical ties to Western Europe, a growing economy, and a stable democracy have assisted in Slovenia's post-communist transition. Slovenia acceded to both NATO and the EU in the spring of 2004. It joined the Eurozone and the Schengen Zone in 2007. My editorialized version of this is, Slovenia is a small country of 2 million people on the border of Italy. They have an ongoing border dispute with Croatia, so that border remains to be seen. That is in reference to the ongoing water dispute between Croatia and Slovenia, where there is a disputed region which would whichever country controls it, control like a semi-major shipping route, so their taxes would start to apply, and where you could leave ships waiting to go into harbor would differ. So it's, in practice, doesn't matter for most things.
It is interesting though, because like, okay, two things and what just happened there. I actually do like how much disdain you can read into communism just from the CIA's like historical summary. I love that. Although communist, we will forgive the Slovenes, even though they have the sins in their blood of communism.
Their Slovene land will make a nice addition to our NATO.
Oh god. And then the Croatian border dispute is something I find very interesting, because if you ever meet a Slovenian person in real life, it is a topic of discussion for them, because it's kind like, I sympathize with the perspective a little bit. Imagine being Slovenia and your next door country wants more coast, and the country that wants more coast is Croatia.
The country which is famously just coast.
Mostly coast.
Yeah, pretty much. And all the good bits are on the coast. I mean, you know. I feel like I saw a quote from a Slovenian politician which was along the lines of, Slovenia considers itself a coastal nation. Tried to be like, we do have coast, and therefore we have sea, and we think our sea is here. Speaking of Slovenian politicians, Slovenia has a government. Whoa, as the CIA would have you believe. It's one of those systems which is ambiguous, because we talk about like unicameral and bicameral systems and things like that, but Slovenia is it is a bicameral system, sort of, and it differs in different places. In some places it describes itself as bicameral, and some places it says it's incomplete bicameral. So this means that they have their main parliament, which is their lower house, where all the actual power is. There's 90 members, 88 members are elected via 11 members each to 8 big constituencies, and then they have multi-member mixed member constituencies with proportional representation, like ranked voting, and then they have one member each for the Hungarian minority and the Italian minorities, which they work out for each election what those constituencies would be made up of, which is confusing initially because I think minority electoral seats is something that, like, I'm not super familiar with as a concept, other than having come across in research for this podcast.
Yeah, it's something though, but like, there is just a huge section of Europe where that's like common practice.
Yeah.
And I want to say the unifying part of that is just like former Austro-Hungarian Empire.
Yeah, I
feel like that's where that's common practice.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense, really, because you end up with you end up with like substantial but spread out minorities of people with very, very different ethnicities and backgrounds, and often language in Europe because of stuff like that.
I'm actually very curious on like the material effect of that, though, because like I understand the idea behind it. It is to have someone who asserts the rights of like an ethnic group that otherwise, like, proportionally probably wouldn't be represented at all. But at the same time, I feel like for inter-ethnic like tension, it might just give a face to an ethnicity.
Yeah.
I'd rally up hate. I'd be very interested in like some sort of long study on that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I'd be interested in like just generally in every system where they have those like what you end up with. The yeah, like how it affects the long-term effects in those parliaments. So in this case, it's 2 seats out of 90. So
yeah, really, like, they often are very small. I mean, because like this is a system where these seats have been definitely like secured, whereas you have situations like in, I want to say, it's Finland, where there's an entire like Swedish ethnicity party, but that was like formed of its own accord. Mm-hmm. That wasn't like the Finnish parliament guarantees X amount of seats for the Swedish interest party or whatever.
Yeah, so I guess moving on to the National Council, which is different to the National Assembly. It has 40 members, and it's kind of like anyone familiar with the Irish system. It's basically the Irish Shannon.
Yeah, so for any Irish people who are listening, which there's a few, we've seen the numbers. I think everyone thought that we were alone in the world with our like weird ass upper house that makes no fucking sense. In such that, like, it's literally on recording. It is on recording. Like, Hugh is a very intelligent person who is aware of how various electoral systems work, but it is on recording where you thought our upper house was directly elected.
Well, the reason I thought it was directly elected is I always had a vote in it.
Because you went to one of the fancy colleges.
Yes. Yeah. So they always asked me my opinion on who should be a senator. So I assumed other people were getting votes. And, like, people are getting votes. It's just not you.
Yeah. It's, That's a bonus episode in itself where we attempt to explain the Shannon, because
so this is very like that, in that it's a non-directly elected like system where you have, so there's 22 representatives of local interests. I've tried looking into this, and I'm not 100% sure how these are elected, but I think it's via the mayors or heads of the region are appointing them, or it's potentially like the local governments of the region are appointing them. But either way, they're appointed for a fixed 5-year term via their region. So it's broken up into 22 regions, and they all get votes, or they all get members. Then there are 6 representatives of non-commercial activities. Sure. 4 representatives of employers. So this would probably be chambers of commerce kind of systems. Mm-hmm. 4 of employees, meaning I'm assuming large labor unions, 4 representatives of farmers, crafts, and trades, and independent professionals. This is again interest groups that are like the nationally recognized main interest groups, I'm assuming. It's it's not elected, but it is indirectly elected. So this is like representative, but not in the way that the House of Lords is not elected. It's not just arbitrarily appointed by whoever was in happened to be in charge at the time. It's a fixed term, usually based on some sort, like based on the theory of like you should have input from all the various parts of society, and then a distribution of representatives that are supposed to vote in their local interest. So you're kind of getting a broad picture of what quote-unquote Slovenia thinks overall, as opposed to my impression of the Shannon was it seemed a lot more arbitrary in terms of most of the members in the Shannon are like voted, like not most, but a large chunk of them are just voted in by whoever happens to be in charge at the time. I think they get like 11 or 12 seats, whereas that doesn't exist in this one. So like there is political party activity going on with 22 representatives of local interests, but like they don't make up like no party it could rest like easy control, like a reasonable control of it. And also they don't have any actual like passing or rejecting power. They have the power to put things in, like they can delay things, but they can't permanently reject things. They can be overridden by the lower house, which is interesting. But I don't know. What do you? we've talked about this a bit before, but how do you feel about this like semi like non directly elected upper house system, even if it is like advise and consent kind of in theory?
Yeah, I don't know. Like. So the thing that's definitely the closest in terms of similarity to what we have in Ireland is this, like, we call it in Ireland the vocational panels, but, like, you're right, it's, like, a special interest kind of section where, like, you have X amount of seats representing the farmers, X amount of seats representing artists, that kind of thing, which I mentioned before we recorded, was at the time of Ireland's nation building period, was like the Pope at the time's like answer to communism. That was interesting. I guess Ireland never was communist, so maybe it works. What if I told you this rock defended against tigers? But the okay, so indirectly elected like upper houses, I don't know. I think my opinion has changed about upper houses since doing this podcast, because you often point to like the Nordic countries and how they just tend not to have upper houses. That is interesting. But as like for myself, I'm a big fan of federations. I personally believe federations all the way down. I think like federal Senate models are pretty coherent. Like I think that kind of makes sense, where like the lower house is representative of population.
I think it works better in like the federation models work relatively well in like very large countries, because you end up with because regions tend to specialize a bit anyway, you end up with people representing the states in the federation have like leaning towards whatever the predominant industry in their area is anyway. So you end up with by proxy some version of this. But if you split up a country like Ireland like that, that's not where you wouldn't end up with that. You would end up with there'd be interest groups that simply wouldn't be big enough to ever get a voice. Like I can't think of a good example now, but there are definitely industries that wouldn't have buy-in. And then I don't know, I think there is to a certain extent like things like when I see problems like Macron has in France when he wants to reorganize how the state-run businesses work, and you're like, well, there actually is no direct representation that the labor unions have that's permanent. They basically have to attach themselves to some candidate or group of candidates on a date, and then if they lose that election, then they're like, well, we don't have any buddies in the government. And while we're like a massive quote-unquote interest group that arguably has a lot of knowledge of how this might work best. They don't have any mechanism by which they have someone speak on their behalf as a permanent fixture, or like, you know, not permanent, but as in they have a permanent, you know, carved out voice. I think it does get over the, like, 22 representatives of local interests is kind of doing the Senate model effectively. So the, like,
Federation model, you mean?
Yeah. Yeah, oh, yeah, 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 exactly. In the, yeah, Federation model. Because you could have, like, I'm kind of not, I like the idea in Federation models to put, like, to remind people of the importance of local elections in federations is to make senators in federal elections for upper houses selected by local governments, because then you can end up with, you know, situations where the local government actually does matter, because it also has, like, downstream effects as opposed to, like, often being ignored. And that happens in big and small countries. Like, the local elections are just generally bad, like, worse turnout, but if you increase the stakes in them, then that might be one way to make them more important. But I mean, the opposite argument is also true of just, like, well, then you're just going to end up with senators who are elected by such a small proportion of people.
It's an interesting one. Like, I think, to be honest, I think my opposition is, like, doing something that's, like, half of both rather than one or the other. I'd be happy with an upper house, a theoretical upper house that probably wouldn't exist in a country unless it was just, like, actually openly communist, where the upper house is basically union representatives that are voted on by the members of the unions that they represent, and that makes up the upper house. Or you do regional differences. Because I understand the, like, regional difference importance of, like, because there are underpopulated regions that if you went purely proportional population, you could probably just fuck over very easily. And I feel like that has happened in the past. Like, a lot of, like, these... We have, like, the deindustrialized areas in a lot of countries, like the north of England and the, like, the French-Belgian border and East Germany and things like that.
Yeah.
These are all regions that are, less populated than their counterparts. Not saying that's, like, a direct factor, but it certainly seems like it's related.
I tend to agree. I think this is a... I think this is probably an overcomplication of that system. But I guess, like, the part of the thing with this is that the National Council, and this is similar to the Shannon setup, is that the National Council really has no actual power. They can, you know, send stuff back with you should really make these changes to it, and the government can, if they have a sufficient majority, just ignore it. And as we'll get onto later, that is what has, like, generally has happened recently when there's been serious questions raised about things in major government legislation. But I think it is kind of because the stakes are actually quite low in terms of how much power they have. It's probably not terrible. Like, this makeup is fine by me, because they're putting it into a, like, an advisory committee, effectively, to a certain extent. Like, it's more important than that, but, like, to a certain extent, it is, like, I think if you compare this to the most extreme case of unelected upper house of the House of Lords in the UK, where, like, I've had people argue with me, both online and in person, that the House of Lords is like, no, but you need them, because, like, it's often filled with experts and stuff. And you're like, experts who are arbitrarily chosen that are usually former politicians and or business, like, buddies with current administrations, whoever happens to be in charge. So, like, what you end up with is something that is supposed to do what the National Council of Slovenia does, but in actual fact is, like, a purely political body that just happens to be unelected. Whereas I think with, like, this setup, at least you have the, well, a large chunk of it is a non-political entity.
I'm very interested in what qualifies you for the non-commercial activity members. Non-economic members, that's it.
Mm-hmm.
What's that criteria?
My impression is that it's changeable, but the information I could find on this was sparse, to be honest.
Mm.
Most of the information, so most the on the National Council's website itself, the most of the information is, oh wait, no, I have a list of this. Aha. So yeah. The members at circa 2006, because that is when I have accessed the last English version of the National Council website that has a good rundown of this in English. Mm-hmm. Is the members of the group of non-commercial activities at the time were a professor who was representative of research activities. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming appointed by one of the universities based on that. There is a Dr. Zoltan who was representative of education. There is a representative of healthcare. There is another professor who is representative of universities. There is a representative of social care, I'm assuming coming from social care department probably, and a representative of culture and sports. My assertion is this might be up to change, but that was the makeup at the time.
And it seemed like somewhat more economic activities than I was expecting from the non-economic sector, but okay, yeah.
Well, they're non-commercial, so they're all
non-commercial. Okay.
They're all education or government, because they have government healthcare, for instance. So the representative of healthcare is, you know, social care, culture, and sports. That's all non-commercial activities. Well, not sports, but you know, I'm assuming Pirzak Anton was not a wasn't like a big Slovenian professional football club owner.
No.
But you know, I have to double check. Then they have a president, but he's there's ceremonial, the commander of chief of the armed forces, not important.
Very, very similar to any president under a parliamentary system in like all of Europe except France.
Yeah, they effectively do what the Danish king does. They they don't do much.
They matter as much as the German president, and no, I don't mean the chancellor, I mean the German president.
Yeah, who will say occasional semi-controversial things, but other than that.
And then he slinks away. Do you know, I heard more about him before I moved to Germany. Now I live in Germany.
Yeah. Current president, Borut Pahor, is former prime minister. He was prime minister for 4 years in 2008 onwards. He's a member. He was a member of the Social Democrats, a centre-left party in Slovenia. And then he was an EPP for a while. He seems fine. Kind of, yeah. It's not super exciting.
Interesting.
Yeah, and I think that's basically everything on how the government works. But let's talk about the government, the current government. So they had an election last year, which I believe we covered at the time, or did we? No, I think we did. I'm pretty sure we did. Yes.
Yes.
But we're gonna briefly run over it again because the way it happened was quite funny. So they called early snap elections because in 2017 they had a railway referendum, and this was on the back of, so the government wanted to build a second large railway line, kind of covering a lot of the country. And the opposition parties decided that this was bad because Hungary was involved in a weirdly suspicious way. They were saying it would be as expensive. It was potentially corrupt how they decided on the route, etc. So they raised I think it was 40,000 signatures they needed. It wasn't very many. It was a lot fewer than you would think. Let me see. But up, 40,000. Yeah, they need per their constitution. They only need 40,000 votes or like petitions to get a referendum held. So they held a referendum on whether or not they would allow this legislation to, you know, be kept around. And the government won the referendum. They won 53% to 46. So like quite comfortably. Well, relatively comfortably. It's a good 20,000 votes in the region, but then the opponents of this brought it to the Supreme Court of Slovenia, claiming that the government had used almost 100,000 euros of public funds to support their side of the campaign. And then the Supreme Court annulled the referendum results and ordered a new vote. So they had a new vote in May, and the voters, by a very, very slim majority, voted to not build the railway. However, the number of registered voters turning out was 7.5%. Which, by the Slovenian constitution, means that the vote was invalid and whatever the other choice was just stands. And in this case, that means they're just building the railway. But because, like, on the basis of, like, the vote being brought at all and them losing the second referendum but it not mattering, Prime Minister Milo Serar resigned, because basically he'd been in government for 4 years and was probably sick of this shit. So they had more elections, and the new elections were semi-uneventful. So the Slovenian Democratic Party won the elections with 25 seats, and Reuters news agency decided to run the very unhelpful headline of "Anti-Immigration Party Wins Slovenian Election." And you'll have to remember, in 2008, well, this was during the furor of right-wing populism, anti-immigrant sentiment is sweeping Europe, they're going to have big majorities everywhere, it's going to be awful. But once you read the Reuters piece more than like 3 or 4 lines, you realize, oh wait, Slovenian politics is like most of Europe and it's very fragmented. So by wins the election, they mean got most seats, but no one will work with them.
Got more seats than anyone else, but did not get the most seats.
Yeah. So they got 25 seats, which in Slovenian, the Slovenian parliament of 90, that's pretty significant.
Mm. It's not 45 though.
This is the thing. It's very much not 45, and there were not 20 seats worth of people who wanted to work with them. So you ended up with a mega coalition, as I am going to call it, which I will get you the composition of in a second. It is list of Marjan Serac? Is that Sorak? Sherak? Sirak. Yeah. So let's go with that. The Social Democrats, the Modern Centre Party, who were the previous, Serar's party, who had previously quit. Another party of a name, and the Democratic Party of Pensioners of Slovenia, which is my favourite party, Desus.
Oh, they'll come back up again. We'll talk about them in a bit.
Yeah, they will come back. So this doesn't have, that's not a majority. Those five parties is only 43 seats. So they also have support from the left party, and generally the Italian-Hungarian national minority seats have tended to support the government, but they're not like in the coalition. They don't need to be. But yeah, so with the left, they have a comfortable majority, but without them, which is some of the time, they don't.
I like the idea that you might formalize your relationship with the, like, one Italian guy in the parliament.
Yeah.
We're going into coalition with Fred.
I mean, not to harp on about Irish politics a lot, but, like, that's basically what used to happen in Irish politics was, you know,
there's so many independents.
Yeah, Fianna Fáil would, like, not quite get a majority, or get a very slim majority, and then they'd give out, like, bridges and roads to independence in return for their support. Some interesting things about this is that this is the 8th National Assembly of Slovenia. So basically there's been 8 national elections that have reshaped the parliament. Mm-hmm. And this is, I think, Serac is only... He's the 7th prime minister, I believe... I can double check that. He's the 9th prime minister. Yeah. So, yeah, this is Slovenia, young country. Not many, not double digits in terms of their parliament sitting. So I guess now we are going to talk about... That's effectively the current makeup. It's kind of this is the first minority coalition they've ever had, and it's relatively precarious. So based on that, I assume there'd be lots of like fun political news from Slovenia we were missing. It turns out that's not really the case.
No. Oh my goodness. Yeah, so I guess we're going to talk about some news from Slovenia, or what news we could find, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, so I guess the main bit of news in the last couple of months has been the government is trying to pass their budget for the year, and basically they'd be having a back and forth with the Left Party about whether or not they would support it, because they didn't like parts of it, such as pension reforms, trying to deal with the, you know, aging population.
Mm-hmm.
And also the upper house was trying to veto this budget for a variety of reasons. But the more I digged into this, the more I was like, oh, the news seems to like dramatically stop in March, like around the time they said they were going to have the vote. That's because they had negotiated it to pass. So the budget was confirmed with 57 votes against 26. So some of the actual opposition party members also voted for this.
Yeah. Oh dear. Yeah. So that's probably the big story at the moment. There's like two kind of things. Well, there's three. One is very quick, which is, if anyone cares, or is in Slovenia, on Friday there will be a doctor strike.
No, that's important. Yeah, that's pretty important to note.
Yeah. From what I can gather, this is due to the fact that there was some agreement between the doctor, so this is confusing if you know Hungarian politics, but the union that represents all medical workers is called Fidesz. it's spelt differently. Because Hungarian spelling is quite unique. But Fidesz, anyway, like they threatened a strike back in 2017. That was averted, though, because a deal was made that was going to be slowly rolled out. The deal has not been slowly rolled out, so they're going to strike on Friday.
Woo.
Woo. So, sounds like you should probably support them.
Mm-hmm.
That was like, I listened to the headlines today on like English-speaking Slovenian radio.
Mm-hmm.
That was the only thing that wasn't like foreign news.
Yeah, yeah.
Or the weather.
Yeah, that's what I found even in translated versions of main Slovenian news outlets, is that events in neighboring countries, especially stuff in Italy, it is big news. And, you know, big political movements in Italy are notable to Slovenia. But for the purpose of doing a Slovenia overview, that's not useful for us. And no. Specific stuff happening in Slovenia that's like on a national level was kind of, other than the budget, which kind of worked itself out, was relatively sparse.
Yeah. The other thing that is like, I would say this is probably an ever-present kind of discussion, because it's been enacted very gradually, and like you mentioned earlier, they have a party dedicated entirely to pensioners.
Yeah
So this is what I'm getting at, which is that since 2015, there has been a bit of a pension reform thing being slowly rolled out in Slovenia.
Yeah.
Where the trade-off is that like pensions are going to be higher, but the retirement age is also going to be higher.
Mm-hmm.
And people are like, oh, that's interesting. And that sparks a lot of debate within like Slovenian news. To give you some facts and figures. 10% increase for men, a 5% increase for women. This is the pension amount. While the retirement age will increase by 9 years for men and 14 years for women.
Jesus. Well, okay.
Yeah, so this number disparity was interesting to me, because I was like, why are women earning, like, getting a less increase but also have to earn more? Like, I don't understand. There was something, this is basically an effort to equalize the pension age and retirement age and stuff like that, because it favored women in the past, which sounds kind of nice, but I think it's from like a very patronizing perspective.
Yeah. I think that sounds to me like it harks back to the days where like a lot of countries had rules where you couldn't work in the civil service if you were married, if you were a woman and stuff like that. So it's kind of, it sounds a bit like a, oh, well, you know, this is different rules for you. You're different kind of thing.
Yeah. it kind of reminds me of like the whole section of like really horrible toxic right wing politics of like men's rights groups, and like one of their giant linchpins is like women are more likely to be given kids in like a divorce settlement. And I was like, yeah, but that's also like that's sexism. That's like that is like the people you're so very like violently opposed to acknowledge that issue and think it's like bullshit.
Yeah. Maybe they could work with them.
But then again, you did start an entire political movement based around like a family court decision. So yeah, maybe you didn't deserve to get your kids on weekends. I don't know. You're not proving your case here. Anyway, back to Slovenia. Mm-hmm. In what is definitely like a way more interesting Slovenian news story.
No.
However, this happened a while ago. Mm-hmm. So I was like, so trying to look on English speaking news sources for Slovenian news was oof. But this is from Associated Press. This is a story that happened on March 29th of mm-hmm. this year. The most recent story after this that wasn't related to basketball happened in like February 14th. So Slovenian news, especially on English websites, is very, very slow trickle. And most of it is due to the fact that like there is a big name basketball player in the States who is Slovenian.
Yep.
So that's where that like, yeah, that's the only thing that other comes up. But this story I found very interesting. A court in Slovenia has sentenced a right-wing politician to 8 months in prison for organizing a self-styled militia that was filmed posing with weapons like axes and rifles.
Oh dear.
The court in northeastern town of Maribor ruled Friday that Andrei Sisko incited subversion of constitutional order with his group. Video and photos of dozens of Sisko's masked men training in a field shocked predominantly moderate Slovenia when they appeared on social media last year. Sisko, a former presidential candidate.
Ooh, yeah, okay.
And I love this title. I can't find any more information on it. Former presidential candidate and a soccer fan leader. Don't know what that is.
Okay.
Is known for his anti-immigrant views. And then that kind of led to like what felt like 20 minutes, but what was probably actually like 4 minutes. I'm trying to figure out what a soccer fan leader is. Does he organize a Facebook group? I don't know.
He could be like the head of, you know, one of those fan associations that are known to be violent.
The Democratic Association of Racist Football Ads.
Yeah, you know, that one. Yeah. But in Slovenia. We all know that one, Kira.
So that's the big news in Slovenia at the moment.
I think the other, like, the more political thing that's more boring and wonky is, in every poll, national poll, since February, since the beginning of February, the current, like, Marja Cerak's party has polled first every time, with wildly different poll numbers between two different organizations. One organization has them comfortably polling, like, in mid-20s, whereas the other one has them polling at 41 to 37% is the two polls as the sample.
Right.
So, somewhere landing between that means they're polling kind of high 20s, which is well ahead of the Slovenian Democratic Party, the center, quote-unquote center-right EPP party. Mm-hmm. So it's actually looking like the party that came first in the election but wasn't able to form a government is now polling and did much, but they were more than 10% above the party of the now prime minister who came second. So that was 25% versus 13%. They're now polling at 21%, and the prime minister's party is somewhere in the high 20s. 28 is like the current average, running average. So it's actually looking like, so he's a member of ALDA, so it's looking like ALDA might do quite well out of Slovenia. But again, 2 million people, population, they don't have a lot of MEPs, but you know, it's interesting.
I think they put forward like 6 MEPs.
Yeah, it's not a big deal, but you know, that's the.
And then for the evening, that leaves us with one last final question for us to talk about, which is, why don't we talk about Slovenia a lot? And that's both me and Hugh, as well as like the media at large.
I think I know why. I think the conversation we've been having kind of outlined that pretty clearly. It's not. There's not a lot of. Being such a small country, there's not like a huge amount of specific news that is relevant outside of Slovenia. It tends to be it's a parliament that's led by a very dense coalition of many parties, so stuff tends to be moving quite slowly, and there's not like giant sweeping reforms coming through that would make it big news that they're massively changing how Slovenian government works. Other than that border dispute, I don't remember. I think that's the reason we talked about them in the first place.
I think that and the election.
Yeah, that and the election. Yeah. But yeah, I think it's not that there's not a lot going on. It's that there's not a lot that's like relevant at a larger, like a big picture wise that's happening. Other than like, I'm sure Slovenian MEPs and their commissioner are doing notable things at an EU level. It's just not something that's made it like our way. That might have been something we should have talked about, was who their commissioner is.
It's all right. He'll be gone soon. Well, no, he won't, but still. Or she won't. I think something we kind of talked about before we sat down to like record this that was interesting, which is, It's very striking how much this reminds us of home, of Ireland. Because I feel like that's the reason Ireland also doesn't get talked about quite a bit on the international press. And being from Ireland, I think that colours our position a little bit, because we know there is like shit going down in Ireland. We know that there are like big situations. Off the top of the head, there's like a homelessness issue in Ireland. We have a situation with housing. Those might be related. Who would have thought? But like, that's probably the ever-present one. And there's like smaller issues as well. Like, there's stuff going on in the news, but Ireland is both not doing enough that influences international press, and at the same time, unlike other bigger countries, the internal happenings of Ireland doesn't like raise alarms for other countries, because like, what would we do about it, kind of thing. It's kind of like, there's the reason we talk about all this like petty bullshit happening in the UK or Italy or Germany is because there's an implicit understanding that like, oh, if they wanted, they could fuck us up. they could do a lot of damage on the world stage if they really wanted to. Whereas I feel like, no matter what Slovenia or Ireland it does, its international impact is going to be minimal.
Yes. It's more about how they interact with other countries relating to them. Not about stuff that happens internally.
Yes.
The Slovenian commissioner, Violeta Bulk, is the commissioner for transport. She has been criticized because of her esoteric views, like necromancy.
Wait, what? I'm sorry, excuse me.
I mean, I don't have time to look into it further.
God damn it.
That cliffhanger.
I also want her thoughts on this railway referendum. Minister for Transport, Commissioner for Transport.
Yeah, I like, as in, the it would be funnier if the Commission for Transport, would they got that portfolio after the referendum as a kind of like, fuck you. It's just like, hey transport government, take the transport commissioner. No, they already had it.
Hey, Slovenia, nice railway referendum. We just made your commissioner the commissioner for transport, and she believes in necromancy. I feel like Europe on global stage is fucking with Slovenia.
Yeah. I wouldn't worry too much about it.
Oh, what a cliffhanger. If you like episodes on the like this and you want to get it early, come to the Patreon, patreon.com/previously in Europe, and support us, and you'll get access to the episode early. Yay! Whoop, whoop, whoop. And this is the first one, so chances are the next ones are going to be better.
I wouldn't count on it.